Well, good afternoon, Juno. It's 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host on KTOO News' Juno Afternoon. And today on the show, we're going to have Literary Day. Abigail Culkin is here to talk about a wonderful book that she has out called The Night Orion Fell. And then Michelle McCann will join us to talk about the book that she edited called The Valley of the Grizzly, written by Ed Farrell. So, and then also we'll hear about a free screening of a film coming up at the Goldtown Theater on Saturday, The Evolution of Dad. Weather looks like rain. And rain, and then probably, well, rain. Cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 54, southeast winds 5 miles per hour. Tonight, cloudy, scattered rain showers, lows around 44, south winds 10 miles per hour, and like that, unfortunately, throughout the weekend.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Efforts to resurrect legislation to streamline permitting for iron ore mining in northern Wisconsin may be on the back burner, but a leading tribal opponent is moving ahead as if the fight was still front and center. Mike Simonson reports.
Last week's failed recall of Governor Scott Walker has Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins thinking efforts to fast-track legislation of an iron ore mine aren't far off.
Yeah, that's the same concerns. The same threats haven't changed. The players might change, even the governorship could have changed, but the actual threats to the environment, the actual things that we have stood opposed to, are still the same.
Wiggins and his people's reservation on Lake Superior near Ashland is downstream of the proposed Pinoki mine. He says an open pit mine would pollute both the air and water, so they're obligated to protect their environment.
We've never stopped preparing and trying to strengthen our position to protect ourselves. So every day it's been business as usual, regardless of the recall or anything like that.
Bad River may soon have another important piece in its arsenal. Last year they received Class 1 status from the federal EPA to set their own water standards. Since then, they've applied for the same rights for air quality standards. So the air and water could come from a Pinoki iron ore mine. If it exceeds tribal and EPA standards, then the permit would be denied. Wiggins hopes that'll force science into future debates.
To drive it on political rhetoric and false private corporate-driven numbers and economic discussion is a disservice to everybody, especially us that are going to eat and breathe that stuff.
For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is holding a hearing on tax and tribal self-determination. The hearing will be held Thursday in Washington, D.C. It will examine recent efforts by the IRS to audit and tax tribal general welfare programs and per capita payments from federal trust funds and settlements. Tribal leaders, federal officials, and a Native finance officer are scheduled to testify. Father's Day is just around the corner, and people across the country will celebrate fathers. There are fatherhood initiatives across the country to help families and men, including wellness initiatives in Indian country. Brenda Kennard, a behavioral health and social services coordinator for Ojibwe people in Wisconsin, talks about the importance of fathers in Indian country and how women can help.
The more we battle the addictions that we see, the abuse, the different things, and the more we find our balance within ourselves, with our men, the better off. Our children need that. They need that balance just as we do as women. Our children need that a strong male that can show them how to be. Roles as women that we can help our men be that kind of, be proud to be that father and take that. And even uncles too. Hey, our uncles, my brother, he's watched out over my daughter. You know, different times, and so I say that I think we need to keep our men, help support them in all the ways that we can so that they can be stronger role models.
Numerous studies show the importance of having a father or father figure in one's life. According to the National Responsible Fatherhood Clearinghouse, the absence of dads can contribute to youth dropout, drug abuse, and involvement in the criminal justice system. During this month in 1961, the American Indian Chicago Conference was held in Chicago, Illinois. The conference brought together hundreds of people from across the country to address the plight of Native America in the early 60s. A declaration was drafted to identify the needs of American Indians, like education, healthcare, and water rights. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
I'm Billy Mills. As a grandfather and Olympic athlete, I know the importance of keeping kids healthy. The Children's Health Insurance Program in your state can provide your child additional health coverage, such as dental care, vision care, and emergency services. Enrolling your child can also help maximize health resources at your travel clinic. To learn more, contact your clinic or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW or visit insurekidsnow.gov.
Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's just right on 6 minutes after 3, and you're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore hosting today on Juno Afternoon. My first guest is an author of a book that tells the story of an accident that occurred aboard a fishing trawler off the coast of Oregon and seriously maimed a man named Larry Hills. And then subsequently in the rest of the book is first the story of the rescue and then the story of this man's treatment in the hospital, and then his almost miraculous, stubbornness-fueled recovery from the accident. Hi, Abigail.
Hello.
As you can tell, I enjoyed the book a lot.
Thank you.
So you said that you had an excerpt from the book. Perhaps that's our best introduction to you, that talks about why you wrote this book.
Right.
Could you read us that?
Sure.
Thank you.
I met Larry Hills in May 2003. Through an ad in the county's only newspaper, the weekly Lake County Examiner, I called Beverly Hills to wallpaper a room in my husband's childhood home that we now own. I had turned my sister-in-law's room into my study and bought some cloth wall covering that was two shades of soft rose pink. My husband said it would make the room look like a French whorehouse, while Bev admired its fine quality. Other than realizing I had hired an expert, the first day was routine and businesslike. The second day began as routine for me. For Bev, it was more. She knew I was an author, and she looked at the titles and topics of my wall of books. True, she didn't see any books on commercial fishing or the ocean, but her thoughts verged from calculating their family budget and how much she'd make on this job to my writing. Bev papered, and I continued to sort through the drawers of the antique secretary my mother had left me. Inside were her diary and memorabilia from when she lived in Paris, love letters my father wrote her, carved whalebone crochet hooks from my Nova Scotian grandmother's youth in the seafaring town of Lunenburg. I fingered the smoothness of one of Mary Isabella Acker's crochet hooks as I read my mother's diary, then went upstairs to ask Bev if she wanted something to drink. How serendipitous it seemed when a few months later I learned that my grandmother's father and brother had died in separate incidents at sea when she was still a child. No thanks, she blurted out. I go home to fix my husband's lunch. He's disabled from a commercial fishing vessel and he works for the Forest Service now. She continued with a couple of quick details of the accident her husband Larry had had 20 years earlier. His deckhand was killed, and Larry hung in the trawl lines on deck for 2 days until the Coast Guard found him. The non sequitur was seamless to her, but I had not had the privilege of getting from her finances to my bookshelves to her husband's accident. I listened politely, expressed my horror, then went downstairs to continue perusing my family's past. Instead, I returned to those tasks with the detachment of a file clerk. 45 minutes later, I realized I'd thought of nothing but Larry's story and had separated it into incidents and chapters.
So this is kind of a rare look into the beginning of the creative spark that puts this book together. So your odyssey through the book now begins. How long did you live with this project?
almost 9 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you keep going through that process? What keeps you getting up in the morning and doing the work that it takes to research something in this detail and then put it together into a book?
Curiosity, refusing to give up when I hit a roadblock, obsession. I think it would be safe to say I was obsessed, as I often am with a book that I write, with the project.
So is that the critical? Must you become obsessed in order for your creative process to work?
No, because I do write some books. I've written a book on changing thoughts and feelings that I feel very strongly about the topic and the approach, but not obsessed.
But this one, this one was different.
Right. This one was different. I would dream about it at night.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I woke up one night in bed and, you know, sort of spread eagle, and I couldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't tied down, but it was the position that Larry was in. And so I laid there and thought about it, and I thought, well, that's kind of odd. Surely I can move something. But nothing moved.
Yeah, yeah. When you identify that closely, because
right,
he was essentially
right.
crucified on that fishing
yes,
reel.
Yes, right, right, yeah. He was.
There's a wonderful pencil drawing. I don't know who did it. Is that his?
One of them is done by one of the Coast Guard rescuers that's
okay.
very precise and detailed and has... And then the other one is done, it almost looks more like a child's drawing in a way... because his fingers don't...
Yeah, he writes and marks things with his mouth, right?
No, he takes a pencil and he weaves it, he grabs it in one hand in a fist, and then he weaves it through the fingers of the other hand so that he can then write.
Ah, but he has very limited muscle fiber left because
right.
they had to remove
in his
so much
forearms,
of it.
In both forearms, he basically had all almost
because of the necrosis.
All. His
yeah.
forearms are no bigger than mine, and he's 6'4", and I'm 5'4".
Yeah. Yeah. And then he goes through all this whole process and turns into a forest ranger.
Right.
Well, a trail.
A ranger, but a person who... is head of the recreational program and develops trails, decides where they're going to be, hires the people who are going to go out and do the heavy work, groups of people.
The guy is a real real inspiration. When you read the book, you think to yourself, you know, things are not nearly as tough. Because he also walks a great deal because he's laid out all these trails by walking them several different
right.
times, and he's only got toes on one foot. And
no, he has no toes.
No toes, and his other foot ends at the center of the foot,
right.
kind of.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so he had to have these special boots made.
Well, they're just shorter is what they are.
Initially, his wife stuffed socks down
yes.
in his boots, and she's the real heroine of the story in an amazing way. You think about what this woman... had to do with her life in order to help her husband go through this recovery process.
It changed her life completely.
Yeah.
Well, it changed both their lives completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was a, yeah.
And they have a son named Lincoln.
They have a son.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the other man that was on the ship, the fairly inexperienced sailor who actually was the beginning of the accident,
right.
was killed almost immediately in the
right,
thing. So
right.
there's a lot of psychological trauma that comes from that.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I think one of the Coast Guard guys that you interviewed said that he had suffered PTSD because of that and some other incidents. So,
yes,
yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
Right,
so
yeah.
We don't think of post-traumatic stress disorder as arising from Coast Guard rescues.
It's,
but,
yeah,
but
it's
a war out there.
It is. It's,
it really
it's very
is.
Intense.
Well, we live in a coasty town here in Juneau.
We certainly
so,
do.
Yeah. So you're visiting us from?
Gustavus.
Gustavus, which is where you make your home now.
Yes, our home is in Gustavus.
Right,
right
okay.
Right.
But at the time you wrote this, were you living there or were you living in
We were living in Gustavus, but
oh,
we
okay.
own the house. We still own the house that my husband grew up in Lakeview, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And so that's...
So it was a book of, it was a commuted book, I take
it. Was a commuted book, right, right.
Okay, good.
And I interviewed the Coast Guard members initially by phone and email, and then realized that I needed to see them. And that was one of the wisest moves I ever made, because what you get in an email is flat. What you get on the telephone you're missing the body language.
Yeah.
And the body language of these fellows, when I interviewed them individually in their own homes, for the most part.
Now, be careful here. You're on a medium right now without body language.
I use a lot, I know.
I always thought maybe, you know, I should sit over here on this side of the studio and say, moves her arms, you know, very, very sotto voce, so blinks her eyes, smiles.
Yeah, I do. But their body language, like when I interviewed Larry, I mean, sometimes he sat without saying a word for 11 seconds.
Uh-huh.
Which
and you
I
think,
never.
I got to ask a question again.
No. It was just, I mean, his facial expressions and his body language were so incredible that it was just sitting there and observing, which was amazing. And the same was true of the Coast Guard fellows, only they weren't silent for, you know, 11 seconds or 6 seconds.
So are you currently obsessed?
I am about to get obsessed again.
Ah, okay. What is the subject of your next obsession?
Well, it's basically along the same lines. I had somebody who was not involved in the book, but who happened to have the day off. And he's a pilot, and he happened to have the day off, and he later became an admiral. And one of his comments when I got in touch with him, because I didn't know whether he was, he didn't know whether he was on the rescue or not. One of his comments was, when you finish this one, I have another story for
Ooh,
you.
Okay. And so the plot comes to you this time.
Right.
Yeah,
it came to me. Uh-huh. And then one of the Coast Guardsmen, one of the pilots, told me a story of an incident that he had. And it will be a short section. It will be a book that will consist of different parts.
Oh, okay.
And then right now, and that one involved a commercial fishing accident. And I'm going to call him up tomorrow morning and interview him by phone, initially anyway, on this one. I may feel a need to meet him again. What I'm doing, I'm looking for a more contemporary commercial fishing story where all does not turn out well. Nobody needs to die again, but, you know, I know those things happen. But
yeah.
Looking for some other stories to put in there.
Well, between now and the phone call, I think you're signing some copies of your books, the Hearthside Stories?
I am.
What times?
I'm signing Friday from noon to 1:30 downtown.
Okay.
And then Saturday from noon to 1:30 at Nugget Mall Hearthside Books.
Oh, okay. So Friday, noon to 1:30 in the downtown Hearthside store.
Right.
And then the Nugget Mall store on Saturday from noon to 1:30.
Right.
Okay.
And then I'll be at the Hearthside downtown Saturday morning, but that's mainly because there are 6 cruise ships in that day.
Yes.
So
as we quietly double the population of Juneau for the day.
Right. And then I also today just left some copies at the Hummingbird gift shop in the airport, and they have a excellent, I don't know whether locals go in there or not, but they have incredible artwork in there.
Yeah.
And so I left some copies there as well, but those will go mostly to tourists as well, I'm sure.
Well, Abigail, we'll hope that a number of people come by and get this excellent
yes.
book. I was just locked into it for the whole time I was reading it, and I'm hoping you find a number of readers who are equally attracted to a really hair-raising story of a man who faced the odds and fought back.
Right, and I unable to put it down. That wasn't the way you phrased it. How did you put it? But people, it grabs a hold of the readers.
Well, yes, it certainly does. This is one that you find yourself your arms hurt after you read a certain amount of it, because it is such an amazing injury that someone
mm-hmm.
could survive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Well, good luck with your book signing, and we'll look
much.
Forward to seeing your name on the cover of a book about sea rescues coming
yes.
up.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
music by a group called the Mollies. It's called The Youngest Daughter, and it kind of makes you wonder what the oldest daughter would be doing. My next guest is a lady who did the editing job on a wonderful children's book. So like I said at the beginning of the program, today is Literary Day on Juno Afternoon. At about 23 minutes after the hour of 3 o'clock, let's welcome Michelle McCann, the editor of Valley of the Grizzly. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Pat.
How are you?
I am great. How are you?
So, I'm just wonderful. What's the weather like in Portland, Oregon?
Well, we're getting close to summer here, so it's a little gray, but I can see the sun, little pieces of it. It's coming. How about you guys?
We have scattered rain showers. It's around 54 degrees out there and a light southeast wind, and our forecast is for the next 4 days to drip and rain on us.
Oh,
so,
sorry.
No, we live in a rainforest, so
yes,
if the sun comes out, people in Juneau have a tendency to run out into the street and say, what is that bright yellow thing?
That's
and,
how I feel. Of course. Got to dry off your moss and your lichens that are growing on you.
Yeah, that's Portland. And Juneau, anyway. So the book we're talking about is called Valley of the Grizzly, and this is a story of a young half-Native boy, I believe Haida?
It's Tlingit.
Tlingit, okay. Half-Native Tlingit boy and his grandfather, and I can't remember if he's related to the pilot or not.
They're just friends.
But they're going fishing, and the plane stutters in the air, and they land on a lake, and decide the next day that the pilot will take off, and because he's drained the gas and gotten the water out of it and can actually fly the plane, and he's repaired enough of it. And then he takes off, and the grandfather and the young boy are supposedly going to be picked up as soon as he can get to civilization and get the plane fixed and come back for them.
But it doesn't quite work out that way, does it?
No, it does not. That's the beginning of an adventure that lasts through an entire summer and a good chunk of a winter until the boy can actually walk out on the frozen rivers and get to a Mountie station at Telegraph Creek. Which tells
you read
us,
the whole thing, didn't you?
Hey, I couldn't stop.
Yeah, it's a hard one to put down.
No, it's a great book. It starts out, I had a little trouble at the beginning because it seemed to me that the setup was a little weak. But then once I realized that what I was actually reading here was an Alaskanized, North Countryized version of My Side of the Mountain, I was hooked in because I loved that book and I loved reading it to my children as well.
Me too.
And so I realized that the author, Ed Farrell, had managed to take the basic concept of that book and turn it into something that I can certainly relate to, having lived in Alaska most of my life. And my kids, of course, were raised in Alaska, so they got it right away, too.
Yeah.
When I read My Side of the Mountain to my kids, they immediately started scouting out hollow trees to move into out in the woods.
Looking for their weasel buddy that they were going to be
friends.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite books growing up as well, and one of the reasons I loved Ed's book so much when I read it is it really reminded me of that and Hatchet. But it is a very different book from those. I mean, he's got a lot of adventure, and it's a little, you know, there's some scary, gory, exciting parts in this book that you don't, you know, not in My Side of the Mountain. So
emphasis on the scary.
There's
a couple of scenes in this thing with that grizzly. I mean, it turns out that the valley, these folks, where this lake is, turns out to be the territory of an 8-foot-high grizzly bear.
Yep.
Who
very
has evidently been shot at least once and so is not too enamored of human beings.
No.
So I don't want to give too much of it away because I'd really like to encourage people to read this book for themselves and then to read it aloud to their children because
I do think the title, In the Valley of the Grizzly, really gives you a clue, though, that it's, you know, it's Ben's struggle not only to survive but, you know, to come to grips with this bear and how he's going to deal with this bear. And as you know from reading the book, he befriends a wolf, and there's just a lot of really cool animal stuff in there.
So that's the book, but I've got the editor on the line here. So we don't get the insights. Editorship is one of the great unthanked jobs, I think.
Yes, we're quiet. We're in the background.
Yeah, you're back there with your red pencils, and you're the ones who always tell us authors, no, too prolix.
Yeah, we just try to help. We do our best to help.
Okay, so when you started to edit this book, Ed was still alive, right?
Yes, he was. I worked with him. He was alive when we finished, so I got to work with him the whole time.
Okay, so
at least a year. It was great.
Okay, so the book was not. You didn't finish the book. He actually wrote the ending.
Oh yeah, it was done when I got it. It was all finished, and then I, you know, did my editing and wrote him, you know, like a 20-page letter. He went back and revised it, and we went back and forth, I would say, for about 6 months editing together and revising and all of that. So he did, it came a long way from where his first draft was to where it is now. And, yeah, the book was completely done and designed and ready to go before Ed died. So he actually got to see the whole thing finished, which was really gratifying because he worked really hard on it. So
there was an interesting little phrase in what you just said. The word was editing together.
Yeah.
Can you explain how that process works between you and the author?
Yeah, well, I really consider editing, it's a collaboration. It's kind of like dancing. And so I would, you know, I read Ed's story in one sitting. I couldn't put it down. And I loved it, but I certainly saw a lot of areas that needed work. And so what I do is I write a letter with all of my suggestions, 20 pages of suggestions, and then the next dance move is up to Ed. You know, he will respond and say, I agree with you on this and this and this. I don't agree with you on this, and I don't agree with you on this. And we go back and forth, you know, what can I live with, what can he live with, and why, and all of these things. And then he'll bring back another draft, and then I'll take another look, and it's closer and it's better, and then we do it again. And we go back and forth. This is the editing process for months with pretty much every book, and even picture books. It's just the way it's done.
Needed work. You said needed work.
It is needed work. If people actually had to read the first drafts of most books, it is not a pleasant experience. I mean, you know, Ed is a great, I mean, he's a great writer. I'm a writer, too. So I think editors who are also writers have the most appreciation. I love it when people edit me because it just makes me sound better. You know, my books that have been edited are so much better than books I try to edit myself. Like having that outside set of eyes to just help you along. One really unique thing about editing this book, which I haven't done on all the books that I've edited, but for this particular project, I formed a teen editing team here in Portland, where because I felt like with this book, it's a 15-year-old boy's point of view, and I'm not a 15-year-old boy. So how am I supposed to know if this sounds right, if this is what boys really think about? So I formed this group of about 10 boys at my son's school and taught them how to be editors. I kind of gave them a couple classes, and then they took the book on, and they edited it as well. And then I sat down with them, and they all turned in an editing letter to me, which I then shared with Ed. And it was really interesting because they agreed with me on a lot of things, but there were some things they really disagreed with me on. And I went with what they thought, and Ed went with what they thought. There was you probably read the scene where the grizzly bear, again, I don't want to give too much away, but the grizzly bear scalps someone in the book at one point. And it's really gross, and it's really scary. And I felt like, oh, my gosh, that is just a really grisly scene for a kid's book, even a teen book. And when the boys read it, it was their favorite part of the whole book.
Yeah.
They just loved it. And they're like, you can't cut that part. That part is the best. You have to keep that in. And it was great for me to hear that. It's like, I'm not 15. I need to respect what the kids want. It's, you know, it's a book for them, not for me. So that was really fun working with the kids and sharing that with Ed. And he was very respectful of what they had to say. So.
How hard is it publishing teen literature now when so many teens are so electronically centered?
You know, it's really an interesting phenomenon, Pat. Yes, teens are online and teens are on the computer, but why young adult literature right now is selling better than any other category of book. It's selling better than it ever has. And we're in a golden age of young adult literature right now. Tons of kids are reading. It's because those kids who grew up reading Harry Potter when they were younger are still addicted to books. They're still hungry for books. So young adult literature is one of the few areas in book publishing that is still just really booming. There are lots of kids reading. A lot of them are reading on their, you know, phones or on their computers.
Yeah.
And e-books are a really big area that young adult publishers are going into. And that's all fine. I don't care how they read. Paper, digital, it doesn't matter. But teenagers are really reading, and they're really reading a lot. It's always harder to get, you know, boys to read, that sort of cliche that boys don't like to read. You know, boys have a lot of other stuff they're interested in, so hooking boys is a challenge. But this book is one of those books that boys really respond to. It moves along at a good clip. You know, there's not a lot of angst, and you know, there's some of that, but it's really it's about his journey, and there's just a lot of exciting stuff going on. So boys seem to really respond to it as well. But yeah, I think right now is a great time to be editing for teens, to be writing for teens, and to be a teenager reading. The quality of what's coming out for kids is fantastic right now.
So what's likely to about come out from your shop for kids?
Some other books, you and I were talking yesterday about some other books that kids who like this book, In the Valley of the Grizzly, might like to read as well, set in Alaska and, you know, similar kinds of adventure stories. So I started thinking about that. I have a couple other recommendations. There's one published by the same publisher, Alaska Northwest Books, and it's called Runaways on the Inside Passage, and it is by Joe Upton. And that one is about a couple of teenagers who run away, and they're looking for their father, who's a fisherman who's disappeared, and they know he's up in Alaska somewhere, but they don't know where. So they get on a fishing boat. They sneak onto a fishing boat that's going along the Inside Passage, and they go in search of their dad. And it's about their adventure on the Inside Passage, and lots of, you know, exciting things ensue. So similar kind of survival, adventure.
Who was the author again?
The author's called Joe Upton.
Okay.
And then, so I have three. The second one is by another author from Anchorage, who I have worked with before on picture books, but she wrote this one for young adults. It's called Out of the Wilderness. And Out of the Wilderness is also set in Alaska, and it is about a boy. Let me see if I've got his name here. Josh is his name, and I think his mother dies, and his father moves the two boys up into a 10-by-20 cabin in the middle of the woods, and they're going to live off the land, and he's a trapper, and, you know, they're going to live this rustic life, and Josh is not into it. Josh wants to be, you know, back in high school playing basketball with his friends, and it's kind of about his journey being in the wilderness with his man family and, you know, kind of getting used to this different life, and his brother forms this bond with a bear, and so there's another bear aspect to this book as well. But it's really good, and Deb Van Ness is a wonderful writer and an Alaskan as well. And the last one is
how do you spell her last name?
Her last name is Vanasse.
Okay.
She's primarily a picture book author, and she does wonderful picture books, but this is one of two young adult books that she's done. She's a great writer, and again, you know, an Alaskan author, and I really think it's great for people, you know, in their state to read and support their local authors, because I think they have a particular insight to the place where you live. The last one is one that is not out yet. It's one I'm working on right now that I'm really excited about, but it's going to come out next year, and it's got a girl in it, which makes me very excited because mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Julie of the Wolves and Island of the Blue Dolphins and all of those girl adventure books that I read when I was a kid. This one is called To the Summit, and it is by Claire Rudolph Murphy. And it's about a 17-year-old girl named Sarah whose parents get divorced, and she decides to take a trip with her dad, and they decide to climb Mount McKinley together.
Uh-huh.
And so it's kind of about her working out her issues with her dad at the same time as there are avalanches and people dying in crevasses and all of the hazards and adventures that you would find on a pretty hardcore mountain climb.
The ideal place to work out issues with your dad,
yeah,
I might add.
You know, it would definitely make your issues with your dad seem a little bit less important. So, but it's a wonderful book. And
Nothing like a good avalanche to sort of focus your thinking.
Exactly. To put it all in perspective, right? Your teen angst is not such a big deal when you're hanging over a crevasse, right?
Mary,
so that
you
one's to the summit, and it'll be out next year.
Mary, you have a fascinating job, or Michelle, you have a fascinating job putting these, editing these books with this dance that you and the authors do. I envy you your occupation.
Well, I love it. I feel like I got my dream job. I'm pretty happy to do it. So,
well, thank you so much. I know that Valley of the Grizzly is available in the Juneau libraries, and I will check to see if these other titles are, and maybe folks would be interested in picking them up if they are, or putting them on request if they're not. Okay, thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks so much for the wonderful tale of how Valley of the Grizzly got all the way from an idea by Ed Farrell to a published book by Northwest Publishing.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Pat. It was really an honor.
You bet. See you later.
All right, take care.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 14th of June, 2012. Flag Day in the United States, the day on which, in 1777, the government officially adopted the Stars and Stripes as our national flag. It's the birthday of Diablo Cody, born Brooke Busey in Lamont, Illinois, 1978. She started a popular blog about life as a stripper, and a talent agent saw it, helped her publish her memoir, Candy Girl, A Year in the Life of an Unlikely Stripper. Then he suggested that she write a screenplay, and in just a couple of months, sitting with her laptop in the Starbucks in a Target store in Minneapolis, she wrote the screenplay for Juno, which, in 2007, became a big hit. It was the highest-grossing movie for Fox Searchlight Pictures. And it's the birthday of a man whose image became a counterculture icon, Che Guevara, born Ernesto Guevara de la Serna in Rosario, Argentina, 1928, parents of Irish and Spanish descent. An affluent socialist family, they sent him off to medical school, and when he was 23, he took a year off and set out on a motorcycle ride for 9 months, 8,000 miles. Wrote a book about it. It was a New York Times bestseller, The Motorcycle Diaries. Che Guevara finished medical school, went to Guatemala, then to Mexico, where he became friends with Raul Castro, who introduced him to his older brother Fidel, who was in exile in Mexico after leading a failed uprising in Cuba. Che Guevara and Fidel had a series of meetings in 1955, gathered other Cuban exiles into their ranks. Che Guevara was in charge of training soldiers for combat. The first guerrilla fighters set out in an old yacht called the Grandma. And in late December 1958, Che Guevara led a crucial victory in the town of Santa Clara against the corrupt Batista regime, which fell on January 1, 1959, and Fidel Castro marched victoriously into Havana. Che Guevara was director of the National Bank. He was ambassador to a number of countries. It was he who orchestrated the close ties between Cuba and the Soviet Union. Che Guevara was captured in Bolivia, October 1967, while trying to start a revolution, and was executed. Here's a poem for today by Stanley Plumlee, entitled Glenn Gould. I heard him that one night in Cincinnati, the concert hall, 1960, the same day Kennedy flew into town in perfect sunlight and rode the route that took him through the crowds of voters and non-voters who alike seemed to want to climb into the armored convertible. Gould did not so much play as address the piano from a height of inches, as if he were trying to slow the music by holding each note separately. Later, he would say he was tired of making public appearances. The repetition of performing the variations was killing him. But that night, Bach felt like a discovery whose repetitions Gould had practiced in such privacy as to bring them into being for the first time. This was the fall, October, when Ohio, like almost every other part of the country, is beginning to be mortally beautiful, the great old hardwoods letting go their various scarlet, yellow, and leopard-spotted leaves one by one. Glenn Gould, a poem by Stanley Plumlee from his collection Orphan Hours, published by W.W. Norton & Company, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. And by reputation.com, providing automated tools to monitor and manage a business's online reviews, because bad reviews can be bad for business. Learn more at reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
18 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News. This is Juneau Afternoon, Pat Moore hosting today. As of 4 p.m., the Juneau Weather Bureau Weather Station Forecast Office released a new forecast. Sounds a lot like the one that we already saw. Showers are likely tonight, Thursday night, rain likely, Friday, chance of rain, Friday night, rain, Saturday night, rain. Guess what? Monday, catch this, mostly cloudy and a chance of showers. Monday night through Wednesday, they're saying mostly cloudy, and the word rain does not appear in that part of the forecast. So conceivable that we could get another peak of sunshine during the first part of next week. So, but there's the forecast as of 4 o'clock this afternoon. My next guest never goes outdoors at all for any purpose. Anyway, Lauren Brooks is here from AEYC, which is Alaskan
Association
for the Education of Young Children, which operates here in Juneau with various things. And she's here to talk about a film that they're doing, but she's also in charge of the child care component of AEYC. Hi.
Hi, hello.
Huh. So what's going up?
Well, since Father's Day weekend is coming up, rapidly approaching, and we thought we would celebrate by hosting a free screening of this documentary called Evolution of Dad, which came out, I believe, about 2 years ago. And so Saturday at noon at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater, there'll be a screening, and there's going to be pizza and popcorn. And what it is this documentary was created by a father, a stay-at-home dad who's also a filmmaker, and he kind of wanted to explore what being a father in America is like today and the challenges and how different people feel about it, the fathers or the surrounding community. So he interviews a lot of people and touches on his own experience, and it's a really fascinating film. And obviously I'm not a dad, but I still thought it was really interesting. So this is open to both you know, anybody really, fathers, families. It's probably not going to be that interesting for children themselves, but anybody's welcome to come. And we also have a dad's toolkit that we're going to be handing out, which is a packet of resources specifically for dads in Juneau. So that's all going to be happening Saturday at noon.
Well, speaking as someone who has been a dad, I can say that it comes without a manual.
Yes, exactly.
You sort of make it up as you go along and hope that you don't do any more damage than necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so a little assistance would not be a bad thing, and having someone explore it using the film medium is a pretty good thing. And not only that, but did I see on there that you have free popcorn?
Yes, free popcorn and free pizza.
Well, those two things have got to be an attraction.
And the movie is free, too. You don't have to pay to see the movie.
Okay, at the Goldtown. And the cushions will be in the little stand there by the door.
Yep, choose your own cushion.
Make yourself comfortable when you go in. So what else is AEYC doing for the summer?
Well, AEYC, man, we normally actually we're quite busy all year round. In the summer, we step back a little bit. Every month we've been producing what's called a Born Learning Bulletin, and it has family activities that are happening around town and activity ideas. And so for parents with kids age 0 to 6 who would like to receive that or get a copy of our summer bulletin, which has lots of information, you can call our office at 789-1235, or if you go to the website at aeyc-sea.org, you can get a lot of info there. And we have in our office Parents as Teachers is a program that's ongoing, that one of our staff members goes and visits people in the home with kids age 0 to 3 and provides support. Like you said, children don't come with a manual, so sometimes it's nice to get some one-on-one guidance so that way the parents themselves are the teachers. And we also always have the Imagination Library, which is where we provide free books for kids age 0 to 5. It's actually a program Dolly Parton started because she didn't have books growing up and wanted to get books into the hands of young children. So anybody with a child age 0 to 5 can sign up for that by calling our office. And then you get a free book every month until you're 5 or until your child is 5. So that's kind of an amazing thing. And then I provide childcare referrals. So anyone who is looking for childcare, rather than going down a list of 30 childcare providers and having them all say they don't have openings, you can call me And I can hopefully find you an opening, because I'm calling them every month and seeing who has space.
The free book a month program is kind of intriguing. Does that come in the mail?
In the mail, yep.
Okay. So, and all you have to do is just sign up for this
program? Yep, anybody can sign up as long as the child is a resident of Southeast Alaska, and that's pretty much it.
Is that an online sign-up process?
No, you can sign up by going to the library, downtown or Valley, or you can call our office. And it takes like a month or so to process.
So if you just go into the library and ask the person behind the desk there that you're interested in, what is the name of the program again?
Imagination Library.
Imagination Library. Mm-hmm. So if you have young children between up to 5 years old.
Up to five, yep.
You just walk into the library, say to the librarian, I'm interested in the Imagination Library
program. And they're really good books. Like, they're nice books. And they're all age appropriate. So depending upon what age your kid is, they have a committee that gets together and picks the books. And this program is all over the country. And we're lucky enough to have it here in Juneau.
Gee, who knew? So AEYC is part of a larger program, you said, before we opened up the microphones. You said it was something called THRED?
Oh, yes. So AEYC itself, we used to be called NIAC, and we've been around for now 30 years. And then, but we've now become part of a statewide network of resource. It's called a resource and referral network, so providing resources for families and child care referrals and assistance to child care providers. And so there's offices in Fairbanks and Anchorage as well. And so that's all part of it's called the THRED network. So if you are moving to Anchorage or Fairbanks and you need assistance with child care or want to go to some family activities, you can look for the THRED office in those cities as well.
And are they called THRED offices there?
Anchorage, their office is just called THRED. It's the THRED office. And then Fairbanks, it's like us. They're another agency as well, and they provide THRED services.
Okay.
But if you search for and they have their own website too. It's threadalaska.org, and they have a lot of parenting and family resources on there. And, you know, they have info on the evolution of dad. And so that's another good resource for families, because it's just statewide information.
Lauren, how long have you been with AEYC?
About 9 months.
About 9 months.
Yeah.
What did you do before?
Before that, I worked at Planned Parenthood.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a kind of a shift of emphasis a little bit.
Yes,
too far, yeah. Okay. So how many people work in the AEYC office? Do you happen to know?
I would say there's about 8 of us.
And you said your area of expertise has to do with child care.
Yes.
What other kinds of areas of assistance does AEYC have?
So I provide child care referrals. Another woman in our office, she provides assistance to child care providers.
We've had them on the show, I think, talking about their programs for training. Yeah.
And we do trainings out of our office. There's an AmeriCorps member who's really awesome. We have Emily does the Parents as Teachers program. We have someone who does the Child Care Food program, which is reimbursement child care providers who are feeding the children these certain healthy meals as standardized by the federal government. They can get a certain amount reimbursed, so that the food program is run out of our office. And then the Imagination Library, and we do all these family nights, so various positions to deal with coming. We do a family night at the library once a month, not in the summer again, but when we start up again in the fall, the first Tuesday of every month, there's a given topic, and somebody comes in and reads a book around that topic, or like I think a month or so ago, it was ravens, and so the live raven named Blueberry came in with someone, and the kids all got to see Raven or see Blueberry and make a craft around Raven. So that's really fun. And we also do Turf for Tots, which is where the Diamond Park Fieldhouse, parents can take their kids out there in the mornings in the fall and the winter, and their kids can run around on the turf, and there's toys, and it's a huge space, so great for running when you don't have room in your house. And lots of programming.
Sounds like anyone with young children should contact AEYC and see what kinds of resources are available.
Yep, and we have a lending library, too, that's just full of books all about raising young children.
Well, one more time, the free screening of The Evolution of Dad is Saturday at noon at the Gold Town Theater. Free popcorn, free admission to the movie, free pizza, and a film on basically the process of being a dad in the 21st century in America.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you can also go online and find the trailer. Go to the website, evolutionofdad.org, I believe it is, and see a little clip.
Excellent.
We'll see you there.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
On the gym floor, B-boys do battle with their dance moves while hundreds of people watch them from the bleachers. Everyone is here at Anchorage's Service High School to enjoy the live beats and healthy competition tonight, but they're also here to help raise money for two B-boys or breakdancers in need. Alan Luna is in the Service B-Boy Club, and he was the teen most involved with making the B-Boys Battle Cancer event happen tonight.
They're not going to go through this by themselves. I know how scary it could be. There's a whole B-Boy community. Everyone wants them to like make it safe just for them to come back home.
Because the two kids who got sick were also both breakdancers, a rumor started going around that somehow dancing and cancer were related. So B-Boy Club advisor and teacher Frank Schaefer says he asked the school nurse to come talk to the kids.
Well, after the second visit, one of the boys under his breath goes, "We need to do a fundraiser." And it was like wildfire. So that comment led to what you just witnessed.
B-Boys Battle Cancer was a pretty major undertaking, and Alan worked alongside many community members who say he helped out a lot. Alan says he stays in touch with his friends, who were both in the hospital on the night of the battle, but able to watch it over the internet. He says he thinks of them often.
You gotta look at life twice. Like, you better like do it before it's just all gone. I mean, and it can end in a minute, but when it doesn't, it's like a beautiful thing.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards, Initiative for Community Engagement.
Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, I'll be back with some guests from Rotaract to tell us about the coming up adult prom. Mac Barnett will join us here. He's doing a presentation at the library on Sunday. Mac is the author of several children's books, including The Brixton Brothers Mystery, Case of the Mistaken Identity, and also the author of several picture books as well. And Stacy Paulson will drop in from Nugget Mall to tell us about the Father's Day miniature golf layout that they have there. KTOO is broadcast on 104.3 FM downtown. We're also heard in the Valley and Auk Bay on K276 AF at 103.1, in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9 and an Excursion Inlet in Icy Strait. KTOO is on K210 AS at 89.9. You can also hear us on GCI Cable, digital channel 871, and our sister stations KRNN and KXLL are in 872 and 873. We're online at ktoo.org.